For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Welcome to Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. We're live here at CJLO Station, and I'm Catherine McLeod, and I'm here with...
I'm Jason Camelot, and it's a very snowy day out there, but we made it into the studio anyhow, the only ones here. Solo show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. I think the last one I was away and called in, so it's nice to be back in the booth, even though, yes, it was a very snowy journey to get here.
Yeah, and we decided for this February snowy day to reach into the vault and find a recording from another February snowy day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of inspired by a practice that Spoken Web has called a ghost reading. And you'll hear a lot about this ghost reading thing over the course of today's show. But one of the things that makes it kind of ghostly is that we return to a recording that is a recording of a poetry reading that happened around the same time as the present moment. So February, we're returning back to a recording from a reading that happened in February in 1972. So we can kind of imagine, well, okay, on a February day, 1972, would it have also been a very snowy day to arrive at this reading? And it was a reading with two poets named Maxine Gad and Andreas Schroeder. And we're going to hear the host of the reading, Richard Sommer, introduce Maxine Gad, and we'll let him introduce the reading, and then we'll jump back in.
Yeah, so this is, mostly we'll be listening to Maxine Gad's part of the reading today. The reading took place on the 18th of February. Today is the 17th of February, so it's a near ghost reading. And let's give it a listen. This is Richard Sommer, as Catherine just said, introducing the reading. This was part of the Sir George Williams poetry series, which had been running since 1965, and was by then a very well-established poetry reading series in the city, featuring American writers, Canadian writers, international writers. But in this case, it's a couple of West Coast Canadian writers, I believe, that we'll be hearing. So here we go. Let's hear Richard Sommer introduce this thing.
I'd like to introduce you to two poets who are Vancouver friends of mine. Their poetry is quite different, as you'll discover. But from my own point of view, I owe both of them, in fact, a debt that is similar in both cases, though neither probably knows it. They've made me, in their own ways, rethink my own feelings about what ought to constitute poetry and poems. And in the case of Maxine Gad, this thinking went into a review which was then sent to the Far Point, which then folded. So you may never see that. And in the case of Andy Schroeder, found its way into a long tape harangue between the two of us on the subject of form in poetry, which I think is now in the Sir George Williams Library, where any of you can endure it if you wish to. At any rate, the first of these poets to read will be Maxine Gad. There'll be a 15-minute break, and then Andreas Schroeder will read. Maxine.
Don't know how much projection to do, eh? I don't know how much to talk about poetry. My connection is very loose to the mainstream, I guess, because I don't know. I'm just not socially related to what's going on. Maybe in the poets you're reading. I guess my identification's was somewhat with a West Coast hippie trip. And between the country and the city, and the first feeling being, you know, the desire for purity. you know, when you're 17 or 18 years old and you figured the country life is it. And then later coming to realize the necessity of the communal life and the city. So I think that's the task I'm going to try and set myself right here. I'm going to read, first of all, the second well poem, which I did experienced in the country, living in the country. I remember the first well poem. I don't know where it's gone because it didn't get published. I disregarded its importance, you know. I tended to take the judgment of editors and, you know, people who set themselves up as authorities. And that's why I'm here, you know. I've kept close enough to them, I guess. I remember the first one thing went something like, wanting pure water, I went to the well. Too wonderful. And there was something about the oracle as the bucket clacked. This is the second well poem. It was hauling up buckets of stars that did taste something between the moon and earth at night, getting the water from the open well, peering into the hollow eye of this planet. By day, the snow rose inch by inch, raising me to the icy brink. A woman laughed. One slip and you drop head first, straight down, you'd never be able to turn around. Sweet life. I had a pump put over the damn thing, which is about where I feel right now. That's about where my connection to poetry is right now. I wonder if that one's around. I don't think it is. I guess I'll just take it as it comes. There's some scheme in this. I guess I got published by a cat named Bill Bissett, you might have heard, who did the thing, did the guru thing, the super energy thing of getting a lot of work done and getting a lot of people's work out and a lot of his work out. A lot of it was real shit, but he got it out, you know. And some of it worked and some of it didn't, but there was so much of it, you know, that I'd like to have had that confidence, you know. I guess almost most people write poetry, they've got it all in their trunk, you know. They don't get it out, but I guess that's what it takes. But this is from one of his first really cheap magazines. It's typed, you know, pretty good typing. His typing got worse. I get very angry. He makes lots of mistakes. But he did a lot of drawings and things. Anybody wants to look at it, you know? I mean, he did it minimum, you know? He was living really poor. And a lot of people still read his stuff. So, I mean, to me, he was a folk poet in that sense. A lot of people still read his stuff because he got the stuff out cheap, you know? Trip. So take this painfulness that you've chosen and pursue it where you thought before it would lead you. Where last night I dreamed pursuing myself as a fawn, grinning like a Cadillac, the shining headlights like inverse stars, the windows of heaven. It was memory I wanted to pursue, and pursuing it left on another trip entirely. I am one of those who, green and blue, we ate dandelions kissing the cheese and spreading out into a desert. Factually, rabbit, we ate into aught, ate into another kind of wild sinecure. Father nut and mama bun ate the oak wheat wise. Honey in Saturn's time precluded work but meant stings. Wrist limp and watches the pain of his expressions flap. Stasis is neat and cavernous. Stasus and stasis. Cassus and cassu. urns older than elders. Case the cosmos, said Dick Doug. Pause in front of an magnifying glass. Fleas, fleas, I ease into disuse. It's a pool. It is deep, swart, intensely cold, coming up from the dentro del mundo, the rivers underground, this forest. Where to go from there? This one is to a poet who is in another world, okay? He looks like a silver lizard, and he's very beautiful, and he knows all about the Greek trip and, you know, Eleusis, which is what Wundt's talking about in the first poem, okay? The oracles from under the ground, that belief you must start out with. It's called, and it's admiration, as well as a bit of terror. Robin has the horse in hand. In the silver woods, all those nightingales I take on faith make known the hollow fact of the beauty of instruments, body or bell that men tongue. The rows of iron filings drags the high fidelity transistor honeybee with singular, discreet and heavenly will, a heavenly pull, this planet's hunger. The charismatic journey of the sun stuck with prongs. A new car called Fire Lord. A space in the woods where the calm flowers tower and we know the moonlight dance of animals. And the friends feast in Norway. The giant watches with his eyes of sky. The cranes on the construction job also imbued with mystery, being mute, blind, and moan. Half the friends are aerial by grace. Blue columns of the harbor cross, delicate strength. Bright blue of the hydrogen flame. The electric blue Buddha, which gassed us all but nobody believed, presented by Leary, paper rose petals, and weary Jews sitting around me, sad at New York, jeering at a campaign. Taking the field, accepting an unknown poem, committing yourself to a place that maybe you don't even want. I remember the bell some of us are to be, 1/2 inch diameter, crystal, if there is crystal. Leary, I should have mentioned, was Timothy Leary. I should have explained that before. Yeah.
Well, Maxine Gadd reading at Sir George Williams University in 1972 on February the 18th. So tomorrow, many, many years ago.
Yeah, I love listening to this reading again. I was really noticing how it was really hard to tell when she moved in and out of a poem. But I really liked that because it was like, then I felt like listening to her talk about the poem also kind of felt like her reading the poem. And then I would suddenly realize, oh, wait, now we're in a poem. And it felt like just her voice kind of carried us through both, again, from the commentary into the poem itself. And then when, even at the end there, when she says, like, Leary, I should have mentioned it was Timothy Leary. It almost was like, oh, right, now we're out of this poem. And it, again, felt like kind of part of the poem. But I was also just thinking, Jason, I don't know if you were noticing this too, but like when she was talking about the poem, either before or after, it felt so improvised. And like we kind of, I think when we were sitting here, we felt like, oh, we feel like we can just like imagine her talking to us. And it felt very informal, but we really liked that element of it because it just felt, again, like we were sitting down with her, hearing her talk about her poems in a very casual way and then read them. And the improvisational quality of it was just, it felt very live.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, You really hear her. You hear this in many readings, not all readings, but you really hear Maxine Gadd sort of tuning herself or calibrating herself in relation to the room. So So the opening part of the reading that we just heard after Richard Summers' introduction, she was really feeling things out. She didn't really know what she was going to do. Yeah. You get a sense that she almost didn't quite know who she was speaking to yet. Mm-hmm. And so she needed to explain herself, but at the same time explain that she would be figuring out what she'd be doing as things unfolded. And I think she needed to start making sound in order to get a sense of some feedback that would help her decide where she would be going with this reading and what pieces she would choose and how she would read them and what it would all mean to her as she did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially thinking about how this was it at what was Sir George Williams, which is here in Montreal, and her being from Vancouver and thinking about kind of even thinking of like poetry communities and, you know, who's listening in the room and who might be actually a friend from out in Vancouver or know people in common, or who does, who in the room would say know her reference to Bill Bissett, would she have to kind of explain that? Or would people be like, oh yeah, okay, of course, I know which poet that is. And it makes me think, oh, would it be, maybe a room of students, or would it be a room of fellow poets, or like kind of a mix of both? And so there's always, going to be this a sense that she's kind of speaking to people, maybe somebody nods in the audience that's like, oh, they get it, or else she maybe has to explain a bit more of the references that she's making, especially again to the West Coast. I think that we're going to hear more. We might pause for
let Maxine have a little more time.
Yeah, because she's about to actually talk about a really important movement in Vancouver called Intermedia. So let's hear that before we do anything else.
Yeah, so let's continue being the audience for Maxine Gadd, February 18th, 1972. You're listening to CJLO 1690.
Oh, yeah, this is where I'm at now. I don't like it, okay? And it's probably not a good poem, but that's the kind of art form I'd like to have seen. Was a collective art form, was what I yearned and hoped for. Poetry is what people write in rooms alone, and I don't like, that's what I was stuck with. And I worked for a while with a group in Vancouver we called it Intermedia, and I had the experience of working with a group. At one point, there were five of us poets, or what we called poets, and we'd go around to various places. We went to Edmonton one time, and we'd try things. We tried chanting and wailing, who was that crazy old lady? Edith Sitwell, remember her? And have you ever heard the sort of sing things she used to do, We tried that. And it really worked, but you go around and you'd say, do you dig the poems? And they'd say, I can't hear them, but we really like your voice, So, left that, got a ache in the gut or something. Ratio, zero, middling eyes, fire into me now, so I can walk with the same ecstasy the supermarket aisles, and hie the hell home to beloved tormentor sitting at home unemployed in the suburbs. Is there no more fertile sphere than me, the loser in this game? Sphere. One of the lion's ladies left behind to scratch colored gods on rocks.
Lay production Nuit d'Afrique, in collaboration with TD Bank Group, presents five exclusive concert events from February 2nd to the 28th, highlighting roots and rhythms celebrating Black History Month. Don't miss the tribute to Tamani Djabate and the closing concert of Samba Touré, the legendary guitarist of Ali Farka Touré. Reserve your tickets now and discover the complete program at festivalnuitdafrique.com.
Hi, my name is Ray Spoon, and you're listening to CJLO.
All right, well,
I'd like to introduce
put over. Did the group
a little scrolling here to try to find
exactly these things? This one is too mute. It's probably, and I don't working say I can't
say. And you know what we heard was the end of that tape. Let me say a word or two. about what it is we're actually listening to.
Yeah.
Materially speaking, we heard the tape run out.
Yeah. So we must have been listening. Well, we were listening to a digital file, but what we were really listening to was a tape. So what is the story of that tape?
Yeah. So let's go way back to the mid-1960s, around the time when the Hall Building was being built downtown at Sir George Williams University, the first main building for that downtown campus of what would eventually become Concordia. And that building was kind of built as a McLuhan-esque fantasy building that would be wired up to capture all kinds of content that would be recorded in video and audio to be reused for teaching purposes afterwards. So pretty much every classroom in the original Hall Building had inputs and outputs that would go to a central control room where things could be recorded. And so when Howard Fink, who was a member of the English department, founded a committee with Roy Kuka and Irving Layton and some other colleagues to start the Sir George Williams poetry series, they decided they were going to record them all. That was sort of a goal of the series. Mm-hmm. And so because they had a kind of tech department that was equipped to do so, they went ahead and recorded all of these readings. At the time, they recorded them on reel-to-reel tape because that was the medium that was being used for sound recording in the 60s. So open reel tape decks were housed in a central space. Mics could be plugged into the walls and it would send the signal up there. And the entire reading series was recorded on reel-to-reel tapes. And when I arrived at Concordia in 1999, I saw those boxes of reel-to-reel tapes sitting in an office and asked about them. And the chair at the time, his name was Terry Burns, told me, oh, that was just some poetry series that took place here. And about a decade later, I went ahead and sort of looked into getting them digitized and started to work with them and realized that there were about 80 different poets reading on these tapes in this series that took place between 1965 and 1975. And so what we heard there, where the reel just sort of stopped, and we chose to go into a commercial, was basically the end of one reel, and we're going to move into the beginning of a second reel. It depended on what speed they chose to record the reading at, and sometimes it would be 3 3/4, but sometimes it would be over 7 inches per second. Seven inches per second, which used up a lot of tape a lot quicker. And I have a feeling that's what happened here.
Right. This story of the box of tapes is in many ways the story of the start of the Spoken Web project. So we're this show is Sonic Lit, a Spoken Web radio show. And the Spoken Web project is a project that you can find out more about by going to spokenweb.ca. But we really just heard the story of Spoken Web's beginnings with Jason finding that box of tapes and wanting to do something with it, because a part of that story that you have often shared that I've heard you share is that even finding the box of tapes again didn't mean that they could then necessarily be played, because, you know, or just that people could use them, because how easy is it to listen to reel-to-reel tape? And they had to be digitized, and the Concordia Archives became involved in digitizing them, and then Spoken Web was able to then put those digitized files online. And they also went through a stage of being on CDs, so yet another form that was useful but not necessarily readily accessible to be able to just listen from anywhere. So getting those recordings into a format that could be put online and shared, and really that we could listen to them again, was really a key part of the early stages of Spoken Web. So you got a little bit of a behind the scenes story here today in this program,
and a sound of what digitizing these earlier analog media allow us to do. Like when I press play here, when we hear,
I'd like to,
you know, get to repeat it again. But when you heard me scrubbing to find, where did we leave off? You're able to actually navigate these tapes in ways that we couldn't earlier. In fact, mm-hmm. when I started digitizing the Sir George Williams tapes that were digitized through the Concordia University Archives, we really didn't know what was on them, right? And there was no way to know. First of all, you needed a reel-to-reel tape player to play them. But even then, to actually engage with them, to navigate them, to, you know, study them, we had to digitize them, which allows us to do that scrubbing, which is sort of what you heard a little bit about as well.
And then I love to, with a recording like this one of Maxine Gad, like, say, if you had a list of the poems that she read, you would be, yes, you'd be getting some information about the recording, but you'd be missing out on so much of all of that commentary that she gives us in between the poems, that there's so much in what she says in between. So I think we're going to head on over to tape number two and see what we hear. We're hoping that this is what we think it is. and I think we're going to hear some more of Maxine speaking before reading another poem. But we'll have to listen to find out.
Maxine Gad, February 18th, 1972. And this is the second reel.
Big Bear Lady, all come together. Or no, all of you, handsome or sane, go away. Whose ability to fight goes on? Don't read that crap. It comes from directly under us. The ground, the ground. It's what you have to take off from. If there's no pole to go to, seer, look around. I take small pot circles. I wanted to say what I haven't seen. The inside of the nose, the rose, the news, the dark, wet gleam. Swim. The morphine is here somewhere. Hey, Indio, where'd you put my coca leaves? Where my golden feather? Scrubby child, so charming in the log. Have to have read all them tomes to come to this dark hall. Sweep the floor. But I have knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. Where's that bell you ate? That'll be $57. She's not made of rubber, you know. Quite exquisitely. We understand each other so well. I can't leave his shiny toes out of my eyes. That pale brow, the mustache madly dangling. Carrot Top, you get out here. There are the gentlemen you must all desire. You are blind from trying to take in knowledge. Now you cannot choose your fate. It must. It's the kindly type, sort of soft, speckled, gray. The sheriff, he king of the dance. Oh, may I, maiden? Must I, man? It's all your choice. The valley is closing in. I can't take any of you people to where you'll be. Get on with it. Spice Islands, salad dressing, next of kin, brassier, bell bottoms. Kid, you're on the hot seat. My behavior, nothing at all. Wow. I promised to hack it out, though the memory's gone, of all I thought worthy to tell you, the person. The glistening tower in the ozone, a simple fact that all's not dead. The house lights all the way up the mountains out of simple, glamorous black. Duck croaks, gull squeals. We can walk along the strips of grass beside the sidewalk. Nothing is going to stop the mound. Asher Banipal, you drag, prance out on a new Metro Golden Mare. A few of us will rave in beard and rag. The rest chase you down on lesser nags. I, under the hoofs of my lover, raving, ah, ah, to the roof of my mouth, to the best of my failure to desire anything but ecstasy, whatever the luxury tax. Flash, flash, clash, ah. Carpet my lord brought in. He lie back and I suck him off. His pleasure empty as my ecstasy, mental as jewelry. Singing suck, suck as I do it, crawling up him he, so cold and clean, his eyes so gray and clear, his skin so cool and pale, a little smile, my dove hop down, oh, nothing ask, only you lie there and let me, see food, The pollution is only the dirt displaced, placed. Look around carefully, then dry and cry and die, or lie and fly and pry, where they say is only open partially, the tender mantle of the sister slug, she slip over like sea edge on a calm day when the comets do not pass. You needle me to this. It's called teasing. I can't tear your mind apart, but open it only enough so you torture your lover a little more by leaving hungry gaps in her satisfaction. I see through you, too, and all around you. Oh, the beads and the wings and the fringes of a sinister sister. All the fun of cold Madame Ethel. We were glad to be gassed, facing this guy again. Why can he tell me those heavy lies or a knob he turns to see what comes on? Can't you see? My father's dead. My mother's taken a bus to Reno. That's Reno, Nevada. I wish it would rain. Like when I ran down to the boatyard, Dad, wailing. There's too much electric in the dry. White snake leaped at me tonight. The side street, fire station watched by four men in white on a roof. Go on in and yin yourself to where the little beasts tell you to be. Steel stop. The proper urge never cease in ordinary softness of human events. Or where your mind stops, or you stop. Stop. I need help. The sea does. Through the industrial night. Ozone. You could have become deaf, but you're glad if you gave me that you think the lady's blackening and laughing frantically. Her husband is bored. So last night I dreamed of meadows burned up by the sun. By so many people on John Wayne's ranch, the one pool muddy and nowhere. I live and work on John Wayne's ranch. Being older type young lady, I wear a middy. John is so considerate of liver troubles. He don't mind screwing with a blue eye neither. The cattle are choreographed and vista vista. Oh, wurra, wurra, the rushes in the rain. Tonto, you're not a Mayan king. Take the silver back to the padre. Lady, you just done lost your job. The fact here, you work out, and if Astarte were kind, the mind be free. The black man, and no anger. The red woman, a sister, and no sinister hungers. And me not bitter, Gary Snyder, that you flee to South China Sea. As it is, work, morning, mail, fresh soft head rhymes. You wish to veer to philosophy. Kit Carson amble by, green beating on his brand new chaps, a whistling little river in his hat like bees. Marginally, the form has not yet touched the delicate nerves of this, the fingertip. No taste of mine has come back into clusters that used to freak me when I dreamed I was a tennis champion. Deadlines is my most famous culture. I do remember a lilac room and the must of cinnamon, ancient good heat of a perfect home where the owl child revealed to me the lies of generation, the pain of unarticulated wisdom. So I recall my path by exercise, by refusing to stop in my dryness. There's no forest happens, only is my dryness. The aridity of the saints, whatever line they turned at, followed. Iphigenia holding up her throat for minutes before the cutting. It's unreasonable. The old lady has rotten teeth. Where is wisdom of a flowery face, of the light dance, of the orgasm which is the center of every story? Oh, ma! The pasture, shall I? Pravda, we will. Priest, it has. Sea wave, it is. Storm, it cannot. Trailer, oh God, no. Luck, red berries rolling into the clear stream. Home, white bread stuffing for my child. We have songs, we have none. I should leave this and do. We should flee. When you stop, you should leave a space for yourself and others, for yourself to know the shame of not continuing the line, and to others so they can see where specifically you have failed. How you do rise, German Goethe, you full of lily lights, of rainbows. I wept hearing the songs of Schiller sung. I wept for myself. Everything stopped. There. I want next give information to the East. It is the prophecy that they are still distilled in. But no one from the East will listen to me, or if only to know that we are dying. The people persist, even if dead. People of the West have metal faces that will droop into the smoothness of mercury. There is no lie they can't imbibe, as there is no poison that will quite kill them. The spirit persists like a virus, as the seed did in space dust, sometimes for a million years. This is the thing that the guy that held onto the raft for 14 days knew. This is what Armstrong, Collins, and Riley out there, those astronauts, this is what they saved up for. It had to be good.
Maxine Gadd.
Reading in 1972 on February 18th. So what was happening at Sir George Williams, now known as Concordia, around February 18th in 1972? Well, we know what was happening on February 18th, but we can look back at the newspaper, the Georgian, and find out what else was going on. So actually, we'll read you the announcement for the poetry reading itself before we tell you what else was going on. On February 18th, it said, poetry, 6.
Yeah, this is from the column in the Georgian that was written by Diana Kerbelis, and it's in the Georgian Happenings column, and it says, poetry 6. Fourth reading. It's confusing. They had a strange numbering series system for the Sir George Williams poetry series.
I figured you would know why it's called Poetry 6.
Yeah, it's the fourth reading in Poetry 6. I think it had a lot to do with they were getting some funding from the Canada Council. There wasn't yet a program for poetry readings from the Canada Council, so they were getting funded under the category of ballet, opera, and other. And you know, the readings were the other. And I think for every grant they got, they had to pitch which poets they would get funding to bring in, and that would be the series. And so they used the series number based on the grants that they got to bring these poets in.
Right.
But here it says, Poetry 6, fourth reading with Maxine Gadd and Andrea Schroeder, February 18th, 9 p.m. So they started their readings really late, you know. Room, and this is exciting, because if anyone's listening and is downtown by any chance near the Hall Building, you can go check out the room where this reading took place, H651. And at the time, H651 was called the Mixed Lounge, which is which is cool. I don't know what that was, but I guess it was just some kind of lounge in the Hall Building.
Yeah.
Admission was free. Mm-hmm.
I teach in the Hall Building tomorrow, so I may have to check out H651 and see what the room looks like now. So what else was happening in February.
Yeah, well, that week, so that was on the 18th, right, as we said.
Mm-hmm.
On the 17th, so on today, 1972, there was The Conscience of a Scientist, a discussion regarding the degree to which scientists ought to be morally concerned about the consequences of their research. So that was being delivered by Professor Michael Hogan, chemistry professor, in the Canadian room of Loyola College. There was the Douglas Burns Clark Theater, the Clark Theater presenting Endgame by Samuel Beckett, produced and directed by the Theater Arts Section of the Department of Fine Arts. And that was running from the 17th, so from today in 1972 until the 20th. And that also started at 9 p.m. sharp. So things really did start late. Admission was $1 for non-students and 50 cents for students. I think one of the more interesting ones on this list of Georgian happenings that I see personally is the notice for the Montreal Women's Abortion Law Repeal Coalition. They were sponsoring a petition day at which a printed petition would be circulated asking the government to remove all mention of abortion from the criminal code. Women willing to circulate the petitions are asked to meet at the YWCA room 215 at 1 p.m. on Saturday, February 12th, 1972. So don't go there today. That's not happening today, but that was one of the happenings that was listed in Georgian happenings.
All right, let's hear what's happening in the city now with a short ad, and then we'll be right back.
Production Nuit d'Afrique invites you to discover new talent with its World Music Showcase, the 18th edition of City d'Or dans la musique du monde. Come discover 36 acts every Tuesday and Wednesday at Club Balatou until April 9th. Take part in the free showcase concerts and vote for your favorite artist. More info on Célidor.com, Facebook, and Instagram.
And we're back with Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. So we've been listening to Maxine Gad reading in 1972. And in this reading, there's a bit of a surprise that happens where she invites Richard Sommer, who we heard at the start of the hour as the host introducing, and she invites him up to play the flute. And it happens around the 24-minute, 23-second mark of this tape that we're listening to. We're listening to tape two. And there's a, sort of this exchange that happens between Gad and Summer where she's sort of saying, you know, I'll read and you come up and make some sounds. And she says, well, do you want to try improvising here? And he agrees to do it. So what's really cool about this moment in this reading is you sort of hear them working it out and you hear them figuring out, okay, what exactly is going to happen? And then you'll also hear the flute. So we've found the spot where this exchange starts to happen. We're kind of going to jump in partway through to it.
Yeah, we're sort of more or less where it starts. Yeah. We're just going to click here at this moment in the recording and see what unfolds.
Do you think we should read some more or what? I go.
You want to read some more?
I don't know. I've got nothing in particular form, just bits, that's the problem.
You can't do the one on the goat god.
Okay, I'll do the goat god. Well, okay, do you want to try improvising to a trip that's here? I'll let you read it.
Seriously, you want to do that?
Yeah, it's just gonna be some sound.
Okay. I don't know if I can play the harp.
I gotta find it first. What's that?
Yeah.
Are we? Oh, I'm sorry. God. What? The flute? I think it's over there. For fun? The same message? I'm asking. Rich is going to make some noise with my flute.
I'll make some noise if you give me a microphone.
Okay. Which one do you want? Let's share it.
It doesn't make any difference.
It goes with a poem.
How did you do that?
What?
It's not.
I tied myself into it.
Oh. Well, here we go.
Shit, I don't even know where I can find it. Oh, here it is. Now, how it goes, you have to keep quiet until, see now.
He's never done this one before.
Where do you want me to do this?
Okay. This is called Shore Animals, and it's a speech piece with flute, and the flute has to listen. And okay. It can speak, too. But you have to listen to it. You never heard it before.
I think it's learning how to speak.
It's called Shore Animals. It's a speech piece with flute. So hearing... where the poppy stopped me. Small chance to star spiel. All you have told me gone. False and beautiful gods and groves. People truth. Put it into song. When the traffic is gone, gone, gone. I'll flee it in the air. My debt to your tongue, Saturn. In your minds, I've split a spleen and lost my lust. Come along, Fawn. Oh, so I have to whistle to you. Aren't you lucky, Lady Yin? The sun's gone in. Aren't you lucky, Lady Lai? The sun's got his clothes on now. You'd burn away like a heart urchin under a man. Aren't you lucky you've got your lonely cave? See what grows here. What virgin ladies love? Where's your tongue? Your deep flute? Come now, lieu of voice, rasped with rational language, practice with razor meaning, with intention. No, we didn't make it the slow ceremony, Yates. They're blowing it up because a few, the few, you praised for their lazy beauty, stayed in their caves, in their dreams, in their sweet voices. I'm going back to mellowness, to sleep. I will not take command. Let the walls fall, but it won't all. It'll be up again, less fitting than before. For grating music, this flute has eaten sands. That part's gonna be a high whistle.
I can't do a high whistle on this, man.
Pass by your maudlin composition hid. You have a radiant image hidden in the rock. It goes on. Multitudes walk over you. Your eyes have left Ireland. I can't go back to prison. They'll tell me what I don't want to know. The warmth of womankind in the stone cell. The human sameness. The mass. They'd be in awe, oh Willie. Big fat laughter of the established volcano. Parrots down lower in the hibiscus flower. It's all so easy.
Well, that was something else, wasn't it?
It was. It was also an abrupt end. We got to the end of that tape again. It caught us off guard. We were really just immersed in the improvisation with flute and poem. That was Maxine Gadd reading and Richard Sommer accompanying with flute. What do you think? Was the flute listening, Jason? Do you think the flute, she said, you know, the flute has to listen?
I think that the flute was doing its best to listen. Mm-hmm. At times it sounded a little bit like sort of scary mystery show music. At other times, it really did seem to be, in a sense, trying to breathe in sync with the purpose of the poem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even thinking, like, was the flute, could the flute speak? Well, she does say, actually, you know, the flute can speak too. And it sounded like the flute was making itself heard, almost, again, not only following the voice, but also speaking for itself. It was also interesting, like, there was parts when she got much louder and, like, the flute also got louder, and just thinking, like, what would it have been like to be in the room watching and listening to that happening? You know, just we can only visualize where Richard Sommer would be standing, say, with the flute up at the front, and she would be at the mic, but just, you know, what did it look like when they were doing that performance? I'd love to see an image of it.
Yeah, and who was there? I mean, that's one of the things that we don't hear on these recordings is very much is the audience, right? So we hear them applauding, but it doesn't give us a very good sense of who is actually applauding, who is there. At times in some of these readings, the poets will call out a name or two of someone who's in the room, like, or even dedicate a poem to someone who's there. So that helps us know who is there. We do know, based on who was running the series at different times, like whose students may have been there. So this Richard Sommer was actually a professor in the English department. He taught creative writing. So one would assume that many of his creative writing students were in the room for this Maxine Gad reading. Just a year or two earlier, George Bowering, the West Coast poet who did teach at Sir George Williams for a few years, was running the Sir George Williams poetry series. Well, one of the main sort of runners of the series. And he was mentoring quite a few young poets in the city. So we knew that they were there. And in fact, one of them was Stephen Morrissey, who was part of the Vacuil Poets. And Stephen kept diary entries on over 30 readings that he attended over 2 years when he was an undergraduate. So we do have some audience information on the readings, but not very much. But it's kind of neat, you know, to hear Maxine Gad call Richard Sommer up there. Can you play flute along with me? This is a piece for speech and flute, you know?
Yeah, especially because there's been so much sort of improvisation and how she's introduced her poems and what she said about the poems throughout the whole reading. So it feels really perfect that there's, like, even further improvisation taking place. And it's been cool to listen to this on the show today, because not only is it right around the time that the reading happened, it happened February 18th, 1972, or February 17th, but it's also just nice to, like, listen to a recording and just, like, pretend that we're in the audience listening and think about, you know, the pacing and what it sounds like when she's introducing the poems and, you know, what her voice sounds like and, you know, the style of it. We've, like, been noticing how improvisatory it is. And I think we're only kind of realizing that from just actually sitting down and listening to the recording. It'd be, you know, hard to tell just from looking at what poems she would have read.
Yeah. And, you know, we have the Spoken Web Research Network has organized certain kinds of events that have combined these archival readings with live performance. We call them performing the archive events. They're another form of ghost reading event, we might say, where we've invited poets who read, say, 50 years earlier to come back to now Concordia. We've even tried to book the same room in which they read. And then we alternate between playing clips of them reading poems that they read in that room 50 years previously to reading some of their work live. And what's really interesting about those performances is that half of the reading then is the poet listening to themselves, to their sort of archival selves, I guess you would say. And often that's some of the most moving, you know, that's like those are the most moving moments of the reading, to watch them listening. And I should also mention that the entire Sir George Williams Poetry Reading Series recordings are available for anyone to listen to on spokenweb.montreal, that website. You can find the Sir George Williams Poetry Series there, Maxine Gad reading, but also, you know, readings by Allen Ginsberg, by Robert Creeley, Irving Layton, Dorothy Livesey,
Daphne Marlett.
Daphne Marlett, yeah. You know, and on and on. There are, yeah, like I said, over 80 poets giving these readings at Sir George Williams between 1965 and 1975. Well, with the few minutes we have left, because this has been digitized, it's been easy for us to sort of move around in time and go back to sort of where we had left off before we went to the flute part at the end. And so we're just going to play out a few more minutes from this reading of Maxine Gadd on February 18th, 1972, at Sir George Williams University.
I am obedient to every sign. This way and that, my head turns. Your new paint suddenly makes sense in that the birds seem to sing for it. You have no radiance. The giants have been selected as goalposts in much the same way as at Memphis, Thebes. We have to run after being as big a god as that. Here it is, my huge golden power.